Happy Monday morning, everyone. Welcome into Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic, and if you are watching on our stream, no, that is not Elijah Campbell. Today, I am joined with Junie Riddle. Junie, this is your 102.5 The Game radio debut this morning on this beautiful Memorial Day. Hope everybody's having a great holiday, and we got a little extra sleep this morning. No 6 a.m. start. Junie, how are we feeling this morning?
I'm feeling great. I mean, we got to catch a great Game 7. Boston Celtics going to the NBA Finals again. Last time since 2010, I remember watching them in the Finals against the Lakers that year. So it's gonna be good to see old Boston back in the NBA Finals.
Nick Kieser, how are we doing this morning? Nick's on the board today.
Doing well. Not going to Joe myself this morning, so there you go.
Nick was producing on Saturday and pulled a big mute when I said, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, big L on that one.
See,
so that
I
was
felt like
me.
I was going to pull a Joe Rexroth this morning, but then Nick went ahead and turned the mic on for me, so I appreciate you, Nick.
You got it.
Speaking of Joe Rexroth, we will have him on at 10 a.m. He is usually of Robbie and Rexroth from 6 to 10. We have a little different programming today just because of the holiday. Hope everybody's enjoying the day off. If you are off this morning or maybe you got to sleep in a little bit later, we will be on from 9 to 12:30 leading right up into some baseball. And Junie, we have got a lot to discuss this morning. So this is like riding a bike for Junie and I, because no, we have never hosted a radio show together, but yes, we do have a podcast and we host it together every week. Hail Marys and Hot Takes. So we talk a lot of NFL. We talk a lot of football. And Junie's background, he's been writing some articles for 102.5 The Game, our website, just a little bit in depth on the NFL, because you know a lot. And people will see that after the show today.
Yeah, no, I pride myself on the Football League. I mean, I don't know. The NFL is just my pride and passion. So I've always kept up with it as a kid. And, you know, I've turned my passion into a career and I've been writing for the game. You know, getting to know the Titans the last couple years, you know, being in Bowling Green at Western Kentucky and then moving down here for the last two. So I feel like I got some good knowledge and a little bit of a different take than some of our viewers are used to listening to. So,
well, I know you have a different take than Joe on something. So we'll get to that's a little preview of that at 10 a.m. So running down the show for everybody listening today on this beautiful Monday morning. Happy Memorial Day. First off, we're going to kick off with, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, Heat-Celtics Game 7 last night. Now we have our final two teams standing. We've got the Warriors out of the West, who their legs are probably feeling pretty good because they've had a couple of days to rest. I saw you had a nice tweet the other day on Draymond Green said something on the with Ernie, Shaq, Charles, and Kenny. He was like, no, we're going to play Boston. And you know, if Jimmy Butler hears that, that's going to fire him up to make it to Game 7. And what a nice little tactic by Draymond.
Oh, that's exactly what I said. I mean, Draymond Green, for as much hate as he gets for being, you know, a dirty player, you know, people don't like his antics. I mean, the guy's a smart guy. I mean, he went to Michigan State. You know, granted, we can say whatever about Michigan State. But regardless, I mean, this is Jimmy Butler we're talking about. When people talk down to Jimmy Butler, that's when he shows out the most. And I knew as soon as he said that, I was like, I'm putting all my money on the Heat in Game 6. I don't care if it's in Boston. I don't care where it is. And they won that game. And I actually thought if they did win Game 6 and then it was back to Miami, that the Heat would actually take it in 7. But somebody else last night showed out a lot, and that's an emerging star in Jason Tatum, showing that he could carry the Celtics. And I felt like every time Jimmy Butler would try and, you know, bring the Heat back into the game, because they were down the entire game. Mm-hmm. As soon as he would edge them back and get them within striking distance, I feel like Jason Tatum would have an answer. And that's really kind of what propelled the Celtics to take Game 7 and lead into the finals.
Well, Eric Spoelstra and the Heat, I mean, they have been so close to making it there and winning these last couple years, right? It started in the bubble, and you really see stars like rookie Tyler Hero, who was a huge loss for them. He warmed up with the team yesterday, but he has a groin injury, so that's a huge loss as far as an offensive weapon, the big shooter for them. And Jimmy Butler, I mean, he had to have his knee drained the other day, and he was fighting through a knee injury while also keeping this team on his back. I mean, I think if it weren't for Jimmy Butler, the Celtics would have won in 5, right? And, I mean, Jimmy Butler was that team. I think that the Heat in the offseason, they need to get another superstar to join Jimmy Butler, and that team will be dangerous. They need to get Tyler Hero healthy. But I'm really excited to see this Boston Warriors final because, you know, are the Warriors going to do it again, everybody? Are they going to go 6? And So it's just really, we're watching a legacy in front of our eyes of the whole Draymond, Steph, and Klay thing. Klay obviously coming off that huge injury. Could they actually do it again?
I mean, I definitely think they can. I mean, you see the impact of Klay Thompson. The Warriors have not been the same with him battling injuries the last 2 years. I mean, every single year that he's been healthy, that team has gone to the finals. And I mean, especially when Kevin Durant left the Golden State Warriors a couple years ago, you would think that that would be the kind of the turn of the tide that, you know, oh, well, you know, they needed Kevin Durant because they couldn't win, you know, without him. And that's the reason that they brought him there. But it really kind of goes to show you how, you know, Steph and Klay and Draymond, that core there in Golden State really changed the game of basketball. I mean, people play basketball differently because of this team and the way that they play. And I think with their chemistry, having a good coach in Steve Kerr and everybody knowing their role on that team is the reason that they're successful. But I mean, if you want to talk about another team that has a, you know, players that fit into specific roles and has an identity, it's this Boston Celtics team. I mean, they're the number one defensive team in the NBA this year. And I mean, when you look at guys like not only Jason Tatum, but Jaylen Brown, who has progressively gotten better every single year that he's been in the league. And now he's risen up to, you know, superstar status. And then you also look at a guy like Marcus Smart, who coming out of the gates wasn't that big of a contributor. He was more known as like a defensive dog that just would kind of like lock the other team's point guards down. He has now become a huge scoring option and a guy that really kind of sets the tone for this team. So it's going to be really interesting seeing this matchup, and I'm really looking forward to this finals, and I think it's going to be a long, hard-fought, gritty series.
I'm taking the Celtics in seven.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I heard a lot of people actually like giving the edge to the Celtics because of, you know, how Al Horford has been playing, and that maybe, you know, down low with the big men that they can maybe kind of bully the Warriors. But I don't know, Michelle. I really think I got Golden State in seven. I just think this series is meant to go seven. I think they have so much talent on the floor here. It's going to be gritty. It's going to be a defensive battle because Golden State is the second-ranked defensive team in the NBA. So a lot of defense is going to be played in these finals. And I just think with all the star capability and the veteranship of Golden State, I think that that's what's going to propel them to get another NBA Finals. What is it going to be, 4 and 6 years? Or
yeah,
not 6 years, maybe. I think it's going to be their fourth, but since 2015, I mean, you got to think this team just keeps going.
Yeah, I mean, they are really writing their legacy, and I think that as far as the Warriors, this will be, I think, their last dance, I guess you could say, in a sense of all of these guys being together. Right, Draymond, Klay, Steph, and then you have huge role players like Poole. But I think also another story people are forgetting is that, as far as the Celtics side, I mean, Brad Stevens stepped down, and Ime, this is his first year as a head coach, and he is heading to the NBA Finals, which is pretty incredible.
And you know what it kind of reminds me of? You know, you suggested this show to me, Winning Time, and it's like when Jerry West kind of stepped down and then filled into that front office and GM role. It's just sometimes guys know, you know, when they're not getting it done and that they can fill into a different role and help a team. And I think that's exactly what Brad Stevens did. You know, he was a college coach where he could recruit, you know, big-time talent there at Butler. And Butler was a big-time program for the size of school that they were. And I feel like him kind of accumulating and seeing the talent and getting that in and getting a guy that can probably manage the team a little bit better at the NBA level was the changeup that this team needed. And I mean, you're seeing it. I mean, how many times did you see the Boston Celtics knocking on the door of the NBA Finals just to come up a little bit short? This year they finally broke through, and I think that that coaching change was the reason why.
They finally broke through. We saw Jason Tatum emerge as a superstar, and a lot of other guys. I mean, Luka Doncic had an incredible postseason play. Jimmy Butler. People put more respect on Jimmy Butler's name because that guy is a dog. And if the Heat make some big moves in the offseason, they will be another dangerous team. If you want to join the conversation, text us, call us. We will be here till 12:30 today. Our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. If you're listening to the stream, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Junie, the Titans hit the field last week, and we saw, you know, a lot of a lot of videos, a lot of storylines coming out of practice. We can say maybe some overreactions, maybe some underreactions, I guess you could say, on just what the people think about this team so far. And one thing we talked about was, you know, not the wide receivers, that everybody was, those were the big headlines of what is this wide receiver group going to look like? Are they going to be able to build that chemistry with Ryan Tannehill in enough time to face the Giants in week one? But you and I think there's another group that we need to take a closer look at and think that that might be the biggest problem on this Titans offense. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and streaming on the Game Asheville app.
Having that offseason of actually being able to work rather than rehab, what is that going to look like for you, you know, week one versus a year ago?
Being in shape is the number one thing. I wasn't in shape very much last year. There wasn't a lot of finishing downfield compared to how it's been in the past. That's kind of how I made my name in this league, is being a guy that finishes, and didn't have the capability of doing that last year. I wasn't in good enough shape to do that, and being out here now, it's already a world of a difference to me. I can put a helmet on. I'm not gasping for air after four or five plays. I can go through a whole period, and I'm laughing and talking trash with the boys. It's a good time. You know, football is now fun for me again. If there's any difference you guys want to know between last year and this year, I'm enjoying the hell out of myself now. Last year, like, let's not get it twisted. That was miserable. You know what I'm saying? You guys go ahead and bleep that out. You know what I'm saying? But seriously, that was miserable. It was, the first game was terrible. Till the middle of the season, yeah, at the end of the year, things started going well. But damn, it was just not fun. Every week was like, you know, you don't feel your best. You're making 100 excuses in your head. And then you get done, you got to go unpack all those things. You can't just pretend like it didn't happen. Like, I had to go and talk to a lot of people and figure that stuff out and unpack that stuff. And once we did, it was, you know, I feel a whole lot better. I feel more like myself than I ever have.
That was Taylor Lewan at Titans OTAs this past week speaking to the media. Welcome back into Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Elijah Campbell. If you're listening to us on 102.5 or 106.3, you can also watch on the stream on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, or Facebook. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy Memorial Day. Nice jams. Nick Kieser on the board for us, spinning the tunes, as Mr. Joe Rexroad would say.
Can't help but bump my head over here.
Oh, God, Junie. Junie's vibing. He's vibing like all the Predators players say. Okay, Junie, we teased it a little bit before the break, and obviously we just heard from Taylor Lewan about him being at OTAs this year and how his offseason, the difference between last season and this season. Last season, coming off that ACL, whereas he wasn't able to work out and he had to rehab heading into the season. So when he did get to all of the offseason practices, camp, he didn't feel himself. He felt he was sluggish. He felt that every rep, just not enjoying himself, not feeling physically there and being able to actually enjoy the game of football. And his outlook this year, he was very vocal in a lot of the clips from the media interviewing him. And essentially, he's just really happy to be there. He's a leader. He said he's enjoying, you know, talking to all the rookies and getting everybody in shape. And personally, he feels he is in a lot better place mentally and physically heading into this season. How much do you think his, I guess you could say, bounce back, or almost year and a half, almost 2 years actually, post ACL, is going to make a difference to this O-line this year?
I don't think it's going to be enough. I think it's great that Taylor Lewan is starting to feel better. And you see this with a lot of offensive linemen. I mean, it's not like a wide receiver or a more athletic player coming off an ACL nowadays. You're talking about big 300-pound men standing in, you know, at 6'6 and above. I think Taylor Lewan is around 6'7. But listen, Taylor Lewan getting back is really good, but the loss of Roger Saffold, I feel like, is really going to hurt this team. I mean, you're talking about two guys that played on one side of the line that are two of the best run-blocking offensive linemen in the league, and I feel like the void of Roger Saffold, although he is aging, although he was dealing with injury problems, and his cap hit was very high, it's going to be a loss for the Titans. And I thought that them moving off Roger Saffold would be a good move for them to move on, but they didn't address the offensive line like I thought they would in the offseason. They kind of felt they needed to address more holes in other places, and I feel like the offensive line is the most important aspect of this team. You know, a lot of fans, you know, criticized the wide receiver play last year. You know, Julio Jones didn't live up to the expectations, and A.J. Brown was in and out of the lineup with injury. But when you look at the identity of this Titans team, it's about controlling the line of scrimmage and running the ball through Derrick Henry. And I think that if they can do that, they can bounce back in the wide receiving, in the wide receiving core and the receiving game in general will go along with that through the play action. So with Taylor Lewan feeling a lot better, being more excited and being at his A game is going to help a bit. But with all these young guys coming in and all these questions, and especially for Ryan Tannehill trying to get going, Derrick Henry coming off his injury, I think that that could be the downfall and the Achilles heel of this team this year.
We touched on this. You just touched on this. A lot of people are talking about the wide receiver room and how, you know, obviously with the loss of A.J. Brown, one of your best offensive players, and then all of these wide receivers coming in that Ryan Tannehill doesn't have a connection with and has to build that chemistry all through the offseason up until the first week. But as we said, we both think and agree that the offensive line is going to be more of a problem for Tannehill and for the entire team, because Tannehill can't throw to anybody if he's getting sacked every other play.
Exactly.
He was the second most sacked quarterback in the NFL last year, right behind Mr. Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Roger Saffold and who else? And David Questenberry.
So with this offensive line this year, I mean, look at Tannehill's stats in 2019 and in 2020. The Titans' offensive line was at an all-time high. Derrick Henry ran for 1,500 yards in 2019. He ran for over 2,000 yards in 2020. And you look at Ryan Tannehill's stats during that time, I mean, you're talking about a guy that had a 55-13 touchdown-to-interception ratio. That is spectacular. This season was such a disappointment because he threw for only 21 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. And like you said, he was the second most sacked quarterback in the league this year. He couldn't get a rhythm going. He didn't have the run game. And as you see this offensive line deteriorate a little bit, you see Ryan Tannehill's play go down a lot. Ryan Tannehill is not the kind of quarterback that can take you up and beyond. You know, he's not a superstar that's going to carry a team. He needs to have these parts around him. And I felt like the Titans did him an injustice this year, because if they wanted to get the most out of this team and get the most out of this core, and while Derrick Henry is still young and still going, I felt like addressing the offensive line was the most important thing, and they failed to do that. They didn't do that. They should have done that, and I think that you were going to see that. Even as good as Derrick Henry is, Derrick Henry is not going to be Derrick Henry if he's not getting the push on the offensive line like he's used to getting. Part of the reason why he has been so successful, along with his size, his speed, and the way that he can shift, you know, because we haven't seen guys like that be able to do the things that he can do. He's not going to be able to do that and generate those big plays that we're accustomed to seeing when he's not getting the holes that he's used to seeing. So I don't know. I think that this season is kind of setting up to be a disappointment after being the number one seed, after going through all the trials and all the tribulations that they did last year to get to where they were. You know, even though they got knocked out the first round, they still had an excellent regular season. But I just think that they're kind of set up to have a disappointing year because they're not going to be able to control the line of scrimmage, which is key for this offense.
Well, I think a big question mark for me, or maybe I was just kind of puzzled, I guess you could say would be the right word, that after this season and, you know, the way that it ended for Tennessee, they, when they got the one seed and they knew that they just needed to get two wins to go to the Super Bowl, I mean, all week on our radio station, on Robbie and Rex Road, on all of the shows on 102.5 The Game, completely overlooked the Bengals. I think a lot of people did.
So, I mean, the national media, I think, didn't really necessarily look over the Bengals. But for me personally, I did. Yeah. I had the Titans winning that game in Nissan Stadium by 14 points. I thought they were going to run the floor with them. I thought their offensive line could control the Bengals' defensive line. I didn't think that the Bengals' defensive line would get much of a pass rush on Ryan Tannehill. I thought that they could run the ball because the Bengals' run defense wasn't that great either. And you're talking about the most sacked quarterback in the league. Outside of Ryan Tannehill, it was Joe Burrow. And what is the strength of this Titans team last year? Was their pass rush. And they got 9 sacks. They showed up. They did their job. And it still wasn't enough. And I just think that if you wanted to, you know, bounce back and get back into what your identity is, you had to go out and fix this offensive line. Now, we're going to get into it a little bit later, but, you know, they had a prime opportunity to do that in the first round this last year, and they decided to go wide receiver and replace the guy they traded rather than getting one of these premier offensive lines when this has been one of the better offensive lines class in the last couple years.
Well, my point was about the Cincinnati game, you know, is that their season ended so they just fell so short to what their expectations were. I mean, obviously everybody's expectation is to try to go and win a Super Bowl, but Tennessee was so incredibly close to it, getting the one seed, and everybody knows how that played out. I was just surprised as to, you would expect a team like that in a go-for-it mode to be a little bit more aggressive in the offseason. And I thought that, I mean, yes, there's still time and they're still waiting for that Julio Jones money to come through in the next couple of weeks. But I thought that maybe they would go out and try to get a big-name free agent or somebody else to either beef up the wide receiver room or either beef up the offensive line. And don't get me wrong, there is still time, but when you are in a mode where you are right there, where you are a Super Bowl contender, and yeah, your season ended so terribly and your quarterback threw 3 interceptions, you would think that the mode would be, we're right there, we're so close. And I feel like the offseason, compared to other teams around the AFC, compared to the entire league, that it fell short and it wasn't as aggressive. So the offensive line still is a question. I mean, you've got Taylor Lewan at left tackle, Ben Jones at center, and Nate Davis at right guard. So you do have those 2 spots that you still need to fill. Is Dylan Raiden's going to be your right tackle? Is he up for it? We saw him play in 1 game last year, and he got the job done, but can he be somebody who you can count on week to week to week starting in the NFL? Junie, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, talking about defense, switching to the other side of the ball, offensive questions, some questions at offensive line, some questions at the wide receiver room. But this defense was something that we saw really, really excel last season. And they didn't have any big losses on their side of the ball. If anything, they had some nice additions that are going to help them take the next step up at defense. But I don't know if too many national media people are recognizing that. Titans are getting a little snubbed here. Junie and I will dive a little bit deeper into Tennessee's defense on the other side. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic. Junie Riddle in for Elijah Campbell on this beautiful Monday morning. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. I hope if you have work off, you're enjoying this nice day. Catch some sun. I know we will be as soon as we get out of this building, Junie.
I love Memorial Day. It's just one of those days that you go out in the lake with your friends. If you got a friend with a boat, or if you have a boat, drink a couple brews, you know, get out, get some sun, lake days. I don't know about you, but I have some great Memorial Day
memories.
Well,
Junie, I know for one thing, we don't have a friend with a boat, and neither of us do, so we might be in a little bit of trouble this afternoon.
Yeah, we're just going to have to do the backyard sunbathing.
Well, it's also a great day to watch some baseball. Tune into Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 4:05 on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds begin a 6-game series on the road. The Durham Bulls, AAA affiliate of the Tampa Bay Rays. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited Hive. Also, if you want to join the conversation, talking Titans right now. The game phone and text line, we're taking texts or calls, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and watch us on the stream. You can see our beautiful faces. You don't quite have as long, luscious hair as Elijah does, but you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Junie, we teased it a little bit before the break. and talked about, I mean, hey, you mentioned the 9 sacks. This Titans defense is mean. They are a boss defense. And we really saw that at the end of last season with that final game against the Bengals. And I feel like that 9 sacks, yeah, it was a big story, but then it kind of went under the radar a little bit just because the Bengals ended up advancing. But this Titans defense, I mean, they signed Harold Landry in the offseason. You've got Jeffrey Simmons, who's still on his rookie contract. You've got Ola Adeniyi. You've got Bud Dupree, who's coming off a year not injured, right? So hopefully his outlook might be similar to Taylor Lewan's in the sense of, I'm not rehabbing and then just hoping to get on the field that week one or two. And Bud Dupree even told us last year, he said, you know, I thought I was ready and then I had to take a step back because he realized that he just wanted to play football but wasn't quite ready yet. So he's coming off another year of being healthy. And from what we saw from him last year, only on the field, you know, not every game, only a couple games, 4 sacks. I think that Bud Dupree is going to have a huge comeback year this year. I mean, we've seen what he's done with the Steelers because it's no surprise that you and I are really, really big Steelers fans. So we love that Bud Dupree get up. And plus, he went to the University of Kentucky. So we love us some Bud Dupree.
Yeah, I don't know about the whole Kentucky part. But when you look at Bud Dupree, he really started to break out in the 2019 and 2020 season. Mm-hmm. When he tore his ACL in 2020, it was in December. I mean, there was only about 4 games left in the season when he did it. And it's just like the fact that he actually came back and played some significant time in 2021. I don't know. I thought it was miraculous within itself. I mean, he had some big impacts in some big games. I mean, you look at the 2 big wins the Titans had when they hosted the Kansas City Chiefs here mm-hmm. and held them to 3 points. That Titans defense held the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and company to 3 points. And then you look at their game against the eventual Super Bowl champions in L.A.
Yep,
where everybody was counting the Titans out because I believe it was the first game without Derrick Henry that season.
It was.
And everyone was like, well, how is Tennessee going to keep up with them without their best player? Well, I'll tell you how. That defense stepped up, and it really kind of goes to show you how an NFL franchise can take a weakness from 1 year. Because in 2020, everybody was complaining about the Titans' pass rush and how it was ineffective and how really...
Oh, how did that change?
It was losing them games. And then that you flip-flop, you go get Bud Dupree, Harold Landry has a breakout year, Jeffrey Simmons has a breakout year, and all of a sudden, we're not talking about the Titans' pass rush anymore, and now it has become the strength of this team and something that they're going to have to rely on in 2022 to get some wins.
Well, it's been something that has won games. You think of that Rams game, that defense won them that game. And down the stretch, I mean, that Bengals game, it was maybe one throw away from Ryan Tannehill from winning them that game. Because if he threw one less interception, right, that defense held them that entire game. But Bud Dupree also later in the season had an abdominal injury. And you think of like your core and how much that plays a role into just walking and doing everyday life skills in addition to playing in the NFL. But Junie, there's been a lot of talk around OTAs this week and how a lot of these big names on defense aren't at OTAs. Jeffrey Simmons isn't. He's been posting some workout videos. Bud Dupree, Harold Landry, a bunch of the big guys on defense aren't there. Kevin Byard wasn't there, I think, the media day, but he's always a guy who steps up as a leader, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe that was just one day he missed and he's back there on the field because he's definitely a voice of the team. But do you think it's a big deal? I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know, they should be there, but it's voluntary, but we know that Vrabel, I mean, any NFL coach is going to want all of their guys there all the time. What do you think? Do you think it's a big deal?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a big deal. I think the big deal of it is that all of them have not been there. I mean, you're talking about the core of this defense. I mean, we just talked about Denico Autry. We talked about Jeffrey Simmons, Bud Dupree, Harold Landry, Zach Cunningham, who they signed off the Houston mm-hmm. Texans, another big inside linebacker. I mean, these guys are the core of this defense. And yes, Byard has been, you know, the more vocal leader. And yes, he has been there more than these guys. But when you're the strength of the team, I feel like you need to be the most vocal. And when you're not there, you're kind of showing the other guys that, hey, maybe it's not as important to work. And I think that that's just not setting a good tone for this season. Will it matter come August? Maybe, maybe not. But this is the time to prepare. This is when championship teams and championship caliber, you know, NFL teams come out and put their best foot forward and try to get guys motivated for the season. I don't know if it's the Cincinnati Bengals loss and if the Titans are still asleep, but they need to wake up. And this, and I think it might become a leadership issue if these guys aren't showing up. I mean, there's a lot of holes in this defense. And when your strength of, I mean, I'm sorry, not this defense, just this team in general.
Team, yeah.
But when your best part of this team is not coming in and showing out, I think it kind of just sets a bad tone. I don't think it will affect them when it comes playing time, but, you know, when it comes to preparation and comes to the mental aspect and, you know, what they're trying to build towards, I just don't think that that's going to propel them to be a true contender in the AFC this year.
I disagree to some extent that I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I do think that, you know, these next 2 weeks, like, we need to see some guys get in here, at least some of the more vocal guys. And, you know, they're working out. And, you know, we saw that Derrick Henry video, and he's never really here during these optional workouts. That's not new for him. But then we also see something from Jeffrey Simmons. And there's been kind of talks of, are they doing that to, you know, send a message? Is there anything behind these videos? And don't get me wrong, this is complete speculation. We don't know. But do you think that they could be doing that for a specific reason? I don't personally think so. I think they're just like, you know, I don't want to go to work until I have to, maybe. But then again, when you are playing, when the NFL is your job, it's a team sport, which this time, the offseason, even just bonding with your rookies, bonding with the new guys on the defense, the new guys on the offense, it does play a role and it can affect things later down the line. But I think if training camp starts rolling around and maybe some guys are still holding out, then we have a problem. But I think right now it's more of, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
It's just kind of disappointing. And
yes.
And when you see a guy like Harold Landry, who had a breakout season last year, and he's not showing up after he got paid, I think if you get paid, you owe it to the organization to show up and put in the work. When you're talking about a guy like Bud Dupree, I mean, Taylor Lewan is eager. He's super excited to get back out there. He's like, oh, I'm finally feeling better. Like, football's exciting again. I don't feel like I have to worry about my recovery and rehab, which is very strenuous if you ever go through it with a knee. I just think these guys should show up, and especially when you see Jeffrey Simmons not there. He had a breakout year as well, and I'm, you know, you could say, oh, maybe he's holding out for leverage to get a new contract. Jeffrey Simmons is going to get a new contract.
Oh, he's going to get
traded,
paid big.
They traded A.J. Brown, in my opinion. I think that they traded A.J. Brown because they knew that they were going to have to pay both of these guys, and they didn't want to pay both of these guys. If they would have kept A.J. Brown and then tried to attempt to sign Jeffrey Simmons, I mean, you're talking about a quarter of the Titans cap. And they just can't do that for two players. They said by trading A.J. Brown that we are going to sign Jeffrey Simmons. So if Jeffrey Simmons is like holding out for any kind of contract dispute or something like that, then I think he's mistaken, because you've already seen that this organization is committed to you and the impact that you bring on the field. So I just think these guys need to show up, because I think they kind of owe it to the Titans for what the Titans have done for these guys.
Well, and if I'm Mike Vrabel and John Robinson, I want to pay you more if you're coming during voluntary workouts. That makes me, like, if you don't show up, it's going to put just, like, salt in the wound, I guess you could say, of, okay, well, come on. Like, you want to play for this team? You want to be a part of this organization? If you come here and you show up, oh, I want to pay you more. And we talked about this on our podcast, little plug here, Hail Marys and Hot Takes. Junie and I host a weekly NFL podcast, that we posed the question before the A.J. Brown trade even happened. And we said, are you keeping A.J. or are you keeping Jeffrey Simmons? And both of us said Jeffrey Simmons. I think that the Titans on the offense, everybody's really scared about this whole wide receiver core. And don't get me wrong, I think that A.J. Brown is an exceptional wide receiver, but if you look at the production last year, he couldn't stay on the field, and Julio Jones couldn't stay on the field, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina was Tannehill's wide receiver number one, and he didn't even have a number one tight end. Now you've got Robert Woods, who looks pretty good, and Tannehill made it very clear that he loves him some Bobby Trees out there, even if it's just some non-contact in practice. Treylon Burks still has a question mark. I know how you feel about that, and we will definitely get into that during the show today, but he's got Austin Hooper. I think we are missing the storyline of people are worrying a lot about the wide receivers for Tannehill. Having a number one tight end. When Tannehill had a number one tight end, his tight end was the number one person he targeted.
And I think that's huge. Having a tight end, especially a guy like Austin Hooper, is just a security blanket for any quarterback. I mean, when you're looking downfield and there's no receivers open, having a big guy like that in the middle of the field that you can just dump it off to always is a relief for any quarterback. So, yes, Austin Hooper got overshadowed in Cleveland because of the abundance of skill players that they had. But if you go back and look what he was doing in Atlanta, I think with him being a top three target for Tannehill this season, you're going to start to see how elite this guy actually is and how much of a difference that he can make for Ryan Tannehill once we get the season started.
Tennessee fans might be worried about the offensive side of the ball, but as we just discussed, the defense looking good, and they even added some extra additions in the draft to beef up that defensive side of the ball. And some people may say Tennessee has the top five defense in the entire NFL. And I found this article written by CBS Sports ranking the defenses in the NFL. 1, Bills. 2, Rams. 3, Saints. 4, Ravens. 5, Cowboys. 6, Broncos. 7, Colts. 8, Patriots. 9, Steelers. 10, Buccaneers. Tennessee fans, text us at 615-737-1025 if you think that the Titans got a little snubbed here, because I think Junie and I definitely think so. We'll give our thoughts on the other side about this. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, 106.3 in The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, in for Elijah Campbell today. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Come watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. And it looks like we have our first caller of this morning. We go to now our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Khalil, how we doing today?
Good morning, good morning.
Good
Happy
morning.
Memorial Day. Good to hear from you all.
Do you have a question? Yeah, we hear you. You have a question about the Titans?
Yes, ma'am. I actually have a question for my man, Junie Riddle, and this is a question that I know a lot of people around Nashville are wondering, and it's a hot topic that we see on ESPN, but I'm curious about our new guy, Malik Willis. I want to know your thoughts about his talent, the rumors about maybe his relationship with Tannehill, and what the heck we're going to do with the future of Ryan Tannehill, what that's going to mean for the Titans, and how that's going to look like in the future.
Cleo, thanks for your call. We'll discuss it right now.
All right, let me get into this. So
you're like, I got this.
Well, because you kind of mentioned, we are Steeler fans, and the Steelers had high interest in Malik Willis. He came from Liberty, and he was running up the draft boards. I mean, some people had him even going number two to the Lions mm-hmm. at certain points. So he's got a lot of talent. He's going to need some work. But this year is going to be Ryan Tannehill. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people in Tennessee, the Titans, and everybody knows that 2022 is going to be Ryan Tannehill. But after that, you know, the door is open for Malik Willis. I mean, you're talking about a coach's kind of player. I mean, this guy did not even win the starting job in high school for his junior year, right? He was told that he needed to play wide receiver because he was so athletic and could still, you know, make plays on the field. This is how humble of a guy he is. He did that with no questions asked. And when, you know, they started struggling in the season during five games, he actually got put in his junior year to play quarterback. And I think that just kind of goes to show you that he's willing to do whatever. He still needs a lot of work, you know, when it comes to play calling, you know, memorizing plays. I don't think he's used to all the verbiage that it will take to go to the NFL. And you see in these videos in training camp of, you know, his mechanics, his drop back, his release. You know, I saw some and I was like, you know, that kind of looked a little sloppy. But then they go to when he's getting coached up a little bit and how he straightens it up. He's just one of these guys that gets it and has developed so quickly. A couple years ago, he was considered one of the worst starters in college football. They did a ranking from 1 to, I think, 130. And he was like in the bottom 10. And then he was pronounced as a potential first-round pick a couple years later. So you look at this guy, he's got a really, really good head on his shoulders. His natural abilities are there. It's just he's got to get coached up. He'll sit behind Tannehill and learn a bit. You know, a lot of people are talking about the whole relationship aspect. The whole mentor comment, we've discussed this on our podcast. I don't think he should have worded it that way. But, again, it is not his job, and it is not his job to take him under his wing to replace him when he's fighting for his career. Now, Ryan Tannehill, we mentioned it earlier, had a great 2019 and great 2020 season when he had everything going for him, but he's not the QB that can take you over the top. So with this Titans team kind of turning over and going into a new era, I see Malik Willis as coachable and as humble and as willing to learn as he is. He's going to learn a lot from Tannehill. He's going to learn a lot from this Titans coaching staff, and I can definitely see him filling in and be the future of the Tennessee Titans when 2023 or 2024 roll around.
I completely agree with everything you're saying, Junie, right there. I mean, the Malik Willis, where they got him in the draft, there is absolutely zero expectations for Malik Willis coming in this year, which is awesome for him. He can be on this roster almost like a redshirt year, right? And he can just be a sponge and soak up all the information, just really not have to worry about hitting the field, not have to worry about being ready for the Giants week one. He can be a student and just immerse himself in film study, in practice, one-on-ones with Todd Downing, your quarterback coach, and just really learning what this Titans offense is about, studying the playbook, learning all this stuff, and just really dedicating this year to learning what it is like to be a quarterback in the NFL, learning behind Ryan Tannehill. I mean, I think Ryan Tannehill made it very clear in his press conference after the mentor comments that he felt as if, I think his words were, my words got, misconstrued or they got twisted or something, because a lot of the national media just put the quote, it's not my job to be his mentor, but there was nothing about the press conference. It was nothing about the sentence before or the sentence after. It was just that specific quote. And when you see that, it's easy when you see that and look up on your TV screen at First Take and you're like, wow, he said that? That's kind of crappy. You don't want to treat somebody like that who's new, but that's not how the press conference went at all. He said, yeah, he's going to come into the quarterback room. Ryan Tannehill is not going to pull a Tom Brady and lock Jimmy G out of the locker room or the weight room or something like that. But I think also, too, people don't realize that when Tannehill spoke back to the media, he did not even let the reporter speak. He said, I want to say something, and went on for almost 5 minutes about how that is not what he meant about the mentor comment. He meant that, I'm competitive, and when I'm on the field, it is my job to be the QB1 for the Titans. And it's not my job to, stop and be like, no, you got to do it this way. That's what the coaches are for. But yes, you've seen in practice him, Malik, do something and them interact. So, and also Ryan Tannehill, just from covering him for the last year, he doesn't seem like that type of guy.
Oh, he's not.
No,
he's
not. And one more thing, too. I think it's really important to note how well Malik Willis did when he had his first media availability. And this was after all of the mentor comments. Malik Willis stood up there as a rookie, got drilled with questions about this whole mentor comment and everything. And it was really funny the way he dealt with it. And I thought that it just showed, like you said, he's a humble guy. He's not a diva. He's coming in and he's like, oh, what comment are you talking about? And then all the media looked at him and he's like, I'm just kidding. Like, he's like, oh, it's not a big deal. I talked to Tannehill. So that, as far as character-wise, that's got to be pretty promising for Tennessee to hopefully have him lead your team in the next couple of years down the line.
I mean, it kind of shows you how poised he is as well. I know a lot of rookies that get into their first media press conference and they don't really know how to kind of handle those certain situations. But, I mean, he handled it like a vet. I mean, he really did. It shows his maturity level. It shows his poise. It shows how calm he is. And he's like, yeah, Tannehill had me over to his house. Like, we talked about it. He texted me right after. We laughed about it. Like, it's not a big deal. He really kind of, I mean, Tannehill didn't even have to go up and give that 5-minute spiel about what he meant by it, because really, I think in that moment, Malik Willis himself put that narrative to bed. You know, Ryan Tannehill came out and was like, you know, being a mentor is just something different to me. And I have a legitimate mentor, you know, in my life. And it's a mutual relationship. He knows that he's helping me, and I know that I can go to him for advice. But, you know, not every single person that helps you along the way to get to where you want to be is going to be your mentor. So, and I think that that's something that's going to go, you know, as that their relationship builds through this process.
So we agree that Ryan Tannehill, there's no question that he will be the starter this year for the Tennessee Titans, but this year will be a career-defining year for him. How well does he have to perform to be the starter in 2023? And how well does Malik Willis, and quickly does Malik Willis, have to develop this year in order to compete maybe for that backup role this year and then eventually compete for that starting role? Junie, hour one done. Kicking us off in hour two, Joe Rexroad from Robbie and Rex Road and The Athletic will be joining us. We'll be talking all things Tennessee Titans, NFL, throwing a little Vols there, and of course some NBA action, because we know our guy Joe, he loves talking some basketball and he loves them some Warriors. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app.